Private Harold Harris took the family to an air display. Watch the aerobatics, he must have got quite carried away. For as he looked into the sky, he thought how he would like to fly.
Suddenly the ground was far below, everybody running to and fro. Steal an aeroplane.
Harold Harris, don't you know you're the highlight of the show?
Can't you see your family running round? Don't you think it's time you settled down?
Welcome to the Strange Brew podcast. My name's Jason Barnard, and that was Ian Campbell Group and Private Harold Harris. And that's because I've got one of the key figures of the Birmingham music scene in the 60s and 70s and up to the present day, really. And guitarist with ELO, he's featured with The Move, Magnum, great songwriter, and we'll be listening to a selection of those songs. It's Dave Scott Morgan. A huge welcome to the Strange Brew, Dave.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, about 2 years ago, I did a podcast with the compiler of Once Upon a Time in the West Midlands, the box set about the Birmingham music scene.
Yes.
Digging into your career, the fascinating thing was, I think the first record that you ever had out was as a songwriter, and it was covered by the Ian Campbell Group, which is known for folk, but that is very much a psychedelia Beatles song. Could you tell us about that song and how it got to Ian Campbell?
You know, I've got no idea how Ian Campbell got a hold of it, but the tune was like a joke song about a guy who goes to an air display and he nicks an aeroplane and goes flying off in an aeroplane. It's just a bunch of fun, really. But the one thing I remember about that is you've just announced the title as Private Harold Harris, which is indeed what the record is. But that song was called Private Airman Harris. Ah. It was about a guy who you know, he's privately an airman in his head, and he goes to an air display and nicks a plane. But Ian Campbell, I don't know how he got hold of it, but he came on the phone to me, and I was just amazed that he was on about putting me record out, you know. And he said, but the only thing is, you've got to change the title to Private something else, like Private Harold Harris. And I said, why? He said, because there's no such thing as a private in the Air Force. And I couldn't think fast enough to kind of say, well, he's not in the Air Force. So I let it go at that, and it was, of course, I was really honoured. So I let the title go, but what I would say about that, I was really impressed with the orchestration they stuck on it in the middle bit. They put some really nice orchestration and made up a few chords that I hadn't made up there, and I thought, good job on that, yeah.
This is about 1966-67.
It must have been, yeah.
You were in groups involving, in the early days, people like Jeff Lynne, Richard Tandy, weren't you?
Yes, that's right, yeah. It's with Jeff and with Richard and, yeah, lots of different groups we kind of went around.
And one of the other connections is I've had Dave Pegg on the Strange Brew, who was a member of the Uglies. Did you replace Dave?
No, I don't think I replaced him. Do you know, I'm not quite sure. I may have done, but I know he preceded me, but I honestly don't know who I took the place of, because Steve came to see me at my house.
Steve Gibbons, isn't it?
Yeah, and he said, we've heard your songs or something, and we'd like you to join the group. I never went to see them. Well, I tell a lie, I did see them once before I joined them, and they didn't have Dave Pegg with them then. And in fact, when I joined, I was an extra person, if I recall, yeah, because I was on rhythm guitar. Jimmy O'Neill was on the bass, because he left at some point, and I went on to bass from then.
You were involved in the latter period of the Uglies, and
yes,
one of the great lost singles of the era is I See the Light, which is exceedingly rare. But it's a great song, and has now been compiled a number of times and is finally getting a wider audience. Can you tell me about that song?
Absolutely. It is. It's a really nice song. I shouldn't say that about my own work, but I do really like it. It's got these crazy diminished chords in it and stuff, and it's got this story about this love affair that's gone pear-shaped. And it starts off with that amazing howling guitar lick, you know, that Willie Hammond played. And it's just it's a really great pop song. You know, it's a real shame that never, ever got a chance to see the light of day with that version that we did with the Uglies, which was just, you know, Steve sang it great. Willie Hammond played great on it. Who else do we have? We had Richard Tandy at that point.
Ah.
Yeah, Richard was playing piano on that, and he just joined. The group had just changed into a different group with Keith Smart on drums, who was later with Wizard, of course, and with Richard Tandy on keyboard. And we made that record. And then right about the next thing that happened was along came Trevor Burton and Tony Secunda, the manager, and everything got thrown up and Trevor joined. Tony Secunda, the manager, walked away from MGM Records. We hadn't signed anything with them, and he just walked away from it. He just said, well, you haven't got nothing signed, so you can't put it out. And, you know, Tony Secunda was a hard dude. Yeah. That was such a shame that didn't come out. And of course, what happened subsequently with the Uglies, that was also a damp squib or whatever you call it. It was just, it went nowhere.
Was that Balls?
Yeah, that was Balls, yeah. Very apt-line group.
Denny Lane joined them, but that was after you left?
No, Denny joined, and then it was really Denny coming along that Richard and I got turfed out, and Keithy Smart got kicked out as well. So eventually it all ended up being Denny Lane, Trevor Burton and Steve Gibbons.
Right.
I think that Tony Secunda, that's what he'd always wanted. He'd wanted those three in a kind of super group. Anyway, that's the history. Yeah.
Didn't mean a lot to me. long as you were there, I didn't really care. I was so in love, I couldn't see. But when I think about it now, I feel I've seen it all before. And what is more, I feel as if I'm sad, and well, I might. I've seen the light. I've seen the light. Good night. The future has been crossed, classified as lost, dead and buried and forgot. And nothing from the past can lift it from its cast and turn it into something that it's not. And all the memories and words only serve to fill a hole into my soul. And you can take that in whichever way you like.
The thing I love about the 60s is there's so many great songs that didn't get a wider airing.
Mm.
One of them is your song Liberty Pavilion, which the Mindbenders recorded. It was only an acetate, was it?
Yes, it was only ever a demo. Eric Stewart came around my house and I played him some tunes and he immediately picked up on that one. And the next thing I knew, he'd done this recording of it, but it never got past the demo stage, I don't think. No.
Wasn't a member of the Uglies, didn't he join the Mindbenders?
Yes, that's right, Jimmy O'Neill. He joined the Mindbenders. He was with the Walker Brothers. You remember the Walker Brothers?
Oh, yeah.
Walker Brothers ended up just the two of them, if you remember, but they at one point there was the three of them. The three of them were on the front of this girly magazine, and it said, you know, the sumptuous, forgot his name now, the lead guy, about Jim, they said, and the dishy, Jimmy O'Neill. Well, I mean, his name was always the dish, but the dishy Jimmy O'Neill. So we just called him the dish, and that was his name.
Get them.
we've heard Liberty Pavilion, but there were songs of yours by other artists that did get out and were hugely popular. Possibly the biggest was the B-side of the brilliant Blackberry Way, and it's The Move.
Yeah.
Tell us about your relationship with The Move and then more about Something as well.
Well, Something started off, I wanted to write a pop song. I just came from the point of view of how can I write it? How can I craft it? So it's just totally trying to write a pop song. And I came up with that tune and that, and I called it That Certain Something. And I played it to Carl, and he straight away, he said, yeah, we need to change the title to Something. And he sang it, and he sang it so differently to how I'd sang it to him, because he put all that blues stuff on it. It just jumped alive when he sung it. He brought it alive, that tune, yeah. But it wasn't about anybody or anything. It was just me trying to write a song to entertain people, which I don't very often try and do, but I did with that one. Before it came out, I was down in the office of Don Arden's office. Don Arden used to manage The Move. I'd probably gone down with Carl that day. And Don said to me, he said, Dave, come here. I want a quiet word with you. And he took me out onto the balcony overlooking Denmark Street. So I'm looking over the balcony, and he said to me, he said, Dave, he said, you know, the Move really need a hitty with this next release, he said. The last one, I think it was Wild Tiger Woman, he said, the last one didn't make it. He said, so they really need something that's going to break it for them this time around. And he said, I want to ask you, he said, which do you think is the most commercial track? Do you think it's this one that Roy's done, Blackberry Way, or do you think it's this one that you've done and Carl's seen, Something? And I thought, well, what a question to ask. But I thought, well, he's asked me. So I just thought about it for a bit, and I hummed them to myself. And I said to Don, I said, Don, I think Blackberry Way might be the more commercial one. He said, He said, okay, Dave, thanks for that. And that's all he said to me. And, of course, that was the choice, Blackberry Way. It's become an anthem for Birmingham, to be honest. It's just, when I hear it, it's like a Birmingham anthem now. So I'm really proud of my song on the B-side of that. At one point, it was in the balance because Carl wanted his as the A-side, and I think Roy definitely wanted his as the A-side. And the Don, I don't think the Don knew. I think he was like thinking, because they're both pretty odd songs.
Did you actually play with The Move on tour, or what was your involvement?
No, I never got to play with them. I turned down a job with them because I wanted to stay with Steve Gibbons. You may know the history that when Trevor left, they asked Jeff to join, and Jeff turned it down because he wanted to stay with the Idol Race. And they came to me and they said, you know, would you join on bass? And I said, no, I want to stay with Steve Gibbons. And so they ended up having Rick Price. So, I mean, that was a funny old scene there, but that's what happened.
Is there something that you were wanting more than anything? Something you took for granted. Something you took for granted.
Carl sang a lot of my songs at my mum's house. I've got tapes of him singing a lot of my songs. On all of them, he was brilliant. And the recording is half reasonable on some of them, but on a lot of them, it's not. The recording's no good. But Carl and I did a lot of work on the songs behind the scenes.
And you mentioned that, and I think one of the demos that you've restored relatively recently was the wonderful I Wrote a Song, sung by the great late Carl Wayner. Tell us about that and a bit more about your friendship with Carl and that process of him singing some of your songs.
Well, it was like one of those amazing times because Carl would come round to my house and I'd just play him a song. I don't know, it might be Normal Day or White Duck or whatever it was. I'd just play it to him a few times and he'd just say, okay, let's record it. So I'd switch my recorder on and we'd just do it there and then. And most of them were just one take of something. I can't remember exactly how I Wrote a Song panned out, but Carl came around and I said, I've got this song look called I Wrote a Song, and I sang it too, and we just went over maybe just over a few details of it, but and then it was switch the tape on, let's do it. It was really impromptu stuff. It wasn't belaboured at all, you know. Carl picked up on my songs very naturally, and he could express them almost 100% just after a few listens, he'd have it off. Because I write quite a varied mix of songs and things, so he could slot into it.
And you worked on that demo to lift it up, given that it was, I assume, an acetate or a very basic recording.
It was on a piece of tape, a piece of quarter-inch tape, done on a Bang & Olufsen sound-on-sound recorder, which is where you bounce from side to side of the tape. Every time you do it, it loses a bit of quality, of course. And so we'd got this tape, and it was a poor quality, but what we managed to do was to extract Carl's voice out off the tape completely. And we reconstructed the backing around Carl's voice. So we re-recorded the backing, and we was able to do that because Matt O'Malley, my friend, he had the technology to be able to do that.
I wrote a song, but I was feeling down-hearted to tell someone that I was feeling downhearted. And then when I had it made, I went and played it to the girl who had been making me proud. And she said it's very good, so she should, when after all she is the reason why I wrote a song. I took it down to the city, played it some more. He said it sounds very pretty. And then he sat back in his desk, cleared his chest and said, how are you when you leave in town?
cigar. My guitar and I were shouldering to a lift going down. I wrote a song, the words were sad and the tune was our own. And all the world looked the meaning while I was dreaming. I wrote a song. So that the man, he might like it. Locked in my room, it took me years to rewrite it. And now my song is on the air. You know I hear it everywhere I go. La la di do. But the girl I wrote it for, I never saw her anymore, and now she never will know. I wrote a song. I wrote a song.
You were the first member of that ELO family to release a solo record, Morgan, and we've now got Hey Paul. Can you tell us about what led to the recording of that album and that song itself? It's a very folky song.
Yeah, Hey Paul is a very folky song, you're right, yeah. Hey Paul was absolutely a love song for a girl who I'd met. But, you know, in a funny way, that song always meant something else to me because of the name Paul. I'd called the girl Paul. That wasn't a correct name, but Paul meant to me, my friend Paul. We used to go around on motorbikes together years ago. Did suicide. I always had a real soft spot in my heart for Paul because he was such a character. And if he'd have been in rock and roll, he would have been a star and I'd have been in his group. But he died. And so that song to me meant something about a relationship I had, but it also reminded me of my friend Paul. That's a funny sort of thing, but songs can do that, can't they? They can remind you of things, and that's what that name did, to me.
So how did you get an album deal?
Ah, that was through Lou Reisner. Reisner heard my tunes. He signed me up as a writer, and he signed me up as an artist, and he made that album with me of 11 songs, I think it is. I think around about 1970 time or something like that.
Tell you what I mean. Ain't no in between. I hate you or I love you, and I do. I've waited for so long, now I only have a song. There ain't no other way of getting through. Hey Paul, ain't that all? Ain't that all I know? Hey Paul, ain't that all I know? Your long, long overdue. And my friends all said it's true. But me, I only want what I can get. Yes, I've thought of that, but the times are talking back, and they're ticking off the days I can't forget. Hey, oh, ain't that all? Ain't that all I know? Hey, oh, ain't that all I know? You're speaking for yourself, and I recognize the color of your words. It's red to speak your mind, and it's green to be unkind, but it's the color of the truth that really hurts. Hey, Paul, ain't that all? Ain't that all I know? Hey, Paul, ain't that all I know?
And Lou was responsible for, he picked out the song Hiroshima. He heard all my tunes and he signed me for an album, but he also had his book called Wishful Thinking. And he said, I want this group Wishful Thinking to do an album of your songs, David. And they did. They did this album, all of my songs, in which Hiroshima was the lead song. Lou Reisner had picked that one out for them. He actually overdubbed the voiceover on the record, where a facsimile of the broadcast made by President way back. So that was really all Lou Reisner's doing.
Wishful Thinking's version of Hiroshima became a hit and is particularly huge in Germany on the continent. But it's a song that keeps also getting recorded by other artists and has been a hit. It's a huge song.
I keep finding versions of it on YouTube of people singing it, especially on the continent. And I found a great one with a Czechoslovak guy. And I found this group from East Germany called the Purdies. I think they may have disbanded now, but back in about in a few years ago, video of them doing it in Berlin. And they were at this massive hall, and they were singing this song in German, you know, Shadow of a Man at Hiroshima, with German lyrics. And all the audience are swaying with the lights of their mobile phones, like they're all singing it and swaying to it. And I looked at this sea of people swaying to my song, and I was knocked out. It was just amazing that my little tune could be that popular.
And the world remembers. sky explode and the world remembers his name, remembers the flame was.
So our next song is, again, there's a brilliant album of songs that's got released in more recent years, but I've chosen somebody, and that is Morgan Cleary. So that was you and Jim Cleary, wasn't it?
Jim Cleary, yeah. Irish poet, extraordinary musician. He wrote the most creative songs, the chords. He made up chords we'd never heard of. I remember Jeff was really interested in some of the chords he had in some of his songs. They were just so weird. We had this group together. We used to do half of his songs, half of mine.
Was it through Richard Tandy that you ended up recording?
Yes. Richard produced. He did a great job of producing it. And that really came about because ELO had just had enormous success with a new world record. And I think it was the case that the record company had loads of money income that they'd made that they were going to have to give to the government, and they were looking around to see what they could spend it on. And so they said to Richard, do you know anyone you could make an album for? Richard, oh yeah, I've got my mate Dave. So, well, we'll supply the budget, go and get him. So he came to Birmingham and said, I want to make a record with you, Dave, an album. And I said, oh, that's fabulous, that Rich. But I said, the only problem is I've got this group now with a guy named Jim Cleary. Oh, who's Jim Cleary? So he came to see Jim and hear Jim and me play the songs and that, and hear Jim's songs, which he wasn't familiar with. And he just fell in love with the whole thing. And so that's how it ended up being the Jim Cleary and Dave Morgan record, yeah.
And for Somebody, did I pick one of your songs or one of Jim's?
Somebody was one of mine.
Ah, well.
I just wanted to do a two-part song so me and Jim could sing it. And he had some of his own two-part songs that we used to do. They're great. And so I did one, a little two-part thing that we could sing together. That was good fun. You know, I miss him a lot. He died quite a long while ago now, quite young. That was a real, yeah.
So you're known as playing with ELO from, I think, 1981 to about 1986. How did you get involved with Jeff and the guys there?
I was down on my luck. I was on the Dole. I'm pals with Jeff and Richard. They're in town. They've got a new tour coming up. And so I phoned you up. I said, Jeff, you know, if there's any chance of any kind of job on your tour, that'd be great. Like, you know, just, and I was thinking maybe they need something or somebody to make the sandwiches for them or carry the plectrums for, you know what I mean? Some minor task that like I might be able to do to earn a few quid. And Jeff immediately thought I meant playing in his group. And he said, yeah, Dave, he said, that's a nice idea. But the only trouble is, he said, I had a pal in the group before and he's not my pal anymore. And I knew what had happened with this pal. And so I said, oh, no, I said, nothing like that. I'm not going to argue with you about stuff like that, what had gone on before. And he said, okay then, Dave. Yeah, come over tomorrow and we'll have a rehearsal. I said, oh, all right. So I asked him for a job and I was really looking for anything, but he assumed I'm playing in his group. And that's what I ended up doing, yeah.
You embarked with ELO. You're on guitar live, weren't you?
Initially, it was the guitar, but then when we were rehearsing, Jeff said, can you play a keyboard as well? And I said, yeah. And have you got one? Yeah, I've got one. So we got my keyboard on board, and it had some nice sound to put on some of the songs that we were doing, like Here Is the News, that little lick there. Jeff said, and can you maybe play a vocal? Yeah, okay, Jeff, no problem. So I'm playing the guitar, I'm playing some keyboard parts as well. That's basically what it came down to.
On that first time tour, and we've got a live clip of Twilight from Germany in about March 1982. And
wow.
I think that's how the show opened at the time. Before we fully get into Twilight, I've heard about Fred the Robot.
Uh-huh.
How did the show open?
Well, the show opened in complete darkness with just laser lights darting to and fro across the platform. And the robot coming out in a searchlight to center stage, turning and facing the audience, and then sing the bit that Jeff's got on the front of his time record, which is sort of just on the borders of your waking mind, there lies another time. Except it's sung an octave lower than that. It's like the singing was actually done through a vocoder, so it could be vocoded really low. And then the robot goes off. There's a big swell of music, and the lights go up, and we're all behind just coming in with the first chord for the song sort of thing. So we kind of come on while the robot's doing his thing, and then the lights go up and there we are doing Twilight.
It must have been great. At one point you're on the Dole and then you're travelling the world with ELO. That must have been some contrast.
It was a tremendous time. We had such a lot of fun. I mean, we were old pals, but we just had a lot of fun. There was only Jeff, Kelly and me to do all the singing. So, and you know, the ELO records, they've like got mountains of vocals on them. And so we get to America, and the management had hired three American singers, and they sang like really quite a pleasant sounding voice, which was very unlike the way we attack things, because we're very loud and it's not particularly sweet sound. You know, it's like just loud, really, that we tended to express ourselves in the songs. But anyway, these Americans are back there singing this sweet little thing, which I just remember quite a nice, lots of vibrato. Oh, you know. We're all on stage and I'm messing around with vocoder and we're rehearsing. So, and on the vocoder, I'm holding the chords to Twilight and I find this little button on the vocoder where you could mix in a real voice with the vocoded voice. So I took this slider up and I went up to the microphone and I just played the chord. I went, Twilight, did the chord like, and it came out, this huge thing came out, three-part harmony, just me doing it on this thing. And Jeff went, what was that? I said, sorry, Jeff, I was just doing this. Do it again, do it. Twilight, that's it. That's what we want. So, and it made such a brilliant big sound, this vocoder thing, by using it with partly as a vocoder and partly as a natural voice as well, just with the chords added to. And Jeff loved it straight away. And that was, you know, that was the end of the three extra singers we had, because throughout the whole tour, we just used that, the vocoder. If you wanted a big harmony, just played the chords beyond it. Me and Kenny sing the notes naturally. And that made a real nice noise that kind of helped out enormously. Of course, now he's actually got real singers to do it, and they really are brilliant with his group he's got now. But we just didn't have that kind of thing. I think he's got 13 people in his group now. There was only 7 of us. So.
Were you involved with the recording of the Secret Messages album then? I think you're on vocals, aren't you, somewhere?
Yeah, I went over to Holland and we spent quite a bit of time recording a lot of tracks for that, a lot of tracks that never made it on the record. Did a lot of singing with Jeff and Kelly, the three of us around a mic, doing backing harmonies. And the one I do recall doing was a song which was working on the factory down at British Leyland at Longwood, making cars or something. You know, it wasn't specifically about British Leyland. It just reminded me of British Leyland. It was just working at the factory, basically, and there was clanking sounds on it. And we did some backing harmonies on this track. It was a rock and roll song. And the next time I heard that song, because that disappeared off the album, and the next time I heard that song, it was Rock and Roll is King. And I can still hear some of the clanking noises and some of the vocal bits that we stuck on it. Well, Jeff had lost interest in what he was doing it about then and completely restructured it as Rock and Roll is King. It's a brilliant pop song, brilliant rock and roll song. So I'm on there somewhere.
Again, a theme of this podcast is that there's just some great songs that people may not know of but are wonderful. And one of the great lost ELO songs, which I don't think has formally been released, is Beatles Forever. You were involved with that, weren't you?
I was, yeah. I remember saying to Jeff, I said, that's a really cheeky subject to write a song about. You know, it was a song about how great the Beatles were, and we did a bit of work on that one. And you're quite right; it's never been released. A lot of the other tunes we worked on have been released, but that one has stayed hidden. But as I recall, it was a song just in honor of the Beatles. And of course, Jeff later got to work with them on. It's completely made that obsolete, his song he did, Beatles Forever. But I don't know, it was never released. And I guess there was reasons for that.
We've mentioned Richard Tandy a number of times, Tell us about your collaboration on the Earthrise album with Richard.
Well, Richard, I think it's true to say that, when he came to me and we ended up doing the Jim Cleary record, I think at that point in time he wanted to do the Earthrise thing. He'd heard the suite of songs that I'd done on that subject, and he liked it and he wanted to do it. But as I say, I was with Jim Cleary at that time, and so that went by the by, and we did the Jim Cleary stuff. I think what happened was Richard had met somebody while he was in America, and he'd played them the Earthrise tapes. They liked the idea too, and they got a budget together to make a record, and a man named Brian Leahy fronted it. He organised getting the cash together and put us in the studio to make that record. It was really a no-expense-spared job. It was really excellent studios, great musicians. We had Steve Lipson producing, who later he was with the Eurythmics, or rather with Annie Lennox. Richard was just the great craftsman, and he's a brilliant musician, got a great feel for producing things. He just did a great job. Him and Steve Lipson did a great job.
And I've chosen Escape from the Citadel. Can you tell us about that one?
That was a song that came from a vision I had about some future thing where we had to get out of the city and stuff. And in this vision, I was with this girl, and her name was ZN102. So she's in the song. What does it say? It says, lovely ZN102, and I, somewhere in the song are those words. I just thought of this song, and I heard it all in this big harmony thing, and I put it all together on my B&O recorder myself. And, of course, the harmonies, I couldn't do them justice on my home recorder. But the introduction, I did that on the recorder, the introduction to it, and we tried to replicate it in the studio, that big long thing where the notes descend down forever before finally resolving. We just couldn't get anything feeling, anything like the. So we ended up using the original tape. But the problem was it was crap and it had all this hiss on it. So Steve Lipson, bless him, always the brilliant guy, he said, why don't we just make it more, he said, put some crackle on it as well. Okay, so that's what we did. We ended up making it sound even older for the front of the record, and that's stayed there, yeah. And, of course, the singing was done again, and all the music was done again with really good instrumentation. It ended up being a real nice piece of work though.
Singing for the sky to see, as I lay with my lady and she with me, dreaming all the day. If there be sunshine in tomorrow, then tomorrow be my lucky day. Z said, quick, now we must not wait, for the future is early, the past is late. Let us take to the road at the twilight's bell, and we'll make our escape from the citadel. Dreaming all the way. If we find sunshine in tomorrow, then tomorrow be our lucky. We turned up a collar to the crimson hue. Travel to the land of the April sky. Lovely ZN102 and I. Dream.
sunshine in tomorrow, then tomorrow be a lucky day.
So we've next got yourself and ELO with Don't Bring Me Down, but that's a version from the Heartbeat 86 concert. An amazing lineup with so many great artists. What are your memories of Heartbeat 86?
Well, I guess the most pertinent memory is Jeff coming in the changing room and saying, he's just landed, he'll be down here in a minute. Okay, you lot, so he'll be down here in a minute. Oh, and he means George Harrison, so his pal George. And we're all in the changing rooms with no trousers on and stuff. So we're all like falling over each other to make ourselves presentable. And the door opens and in comes George with Jeff. And I remember we all stood there like toy soldiers, like so nervous. I don't think anybody said anything to the guy. Poor old George, he must have thought, what a load of weirdos there. So because we were just so gobsmacked seeing George Harrison, you know.
It was a charity concert, wasn't it? That was arranged by Bev Bevan.
That's quite correct, yeah. It was Bev's baby, that was.
And so it was like people like Robert Plant, the Moody Blues, UB40.
Steve Gibb was there.
Steve Gibbons, Roy Wood, Denny Litt. You must have known almost every single artist.
I think the Applejacks were there. I mean, I know Megan was there, and I think the Applejacks did a spin of their song. You know, they had the first hit in Birmingham. And at the end, everyone was on stage, and George was there and doing a Chuck Berry song and everybody taking a solo, you know, and stuff. And it was just pandemonium, but it was just a great night.
So a few months after that, there was the final ELO tour in that guise.
Yeah, the last tour we did was 1986. We ended in Germany, Stuttgart in Germany in July 1986.
We'll be right back. better than that. Come on, you can do it much louder than that. Are you ready? One, two, three, don't bring me down. It's really good, but you could make it wonderful for this special occasion. You could make it really bloody loud. One, two, three, don't bring me down.
Featured on Jeff's Armchair Theatre album, didn't you?
Yes, just doing some backing singing. I think we're called the Warwick Orioles or something. Yeah, everybody who came to Jeff's door while he was doing that got roped in on that record and got to sing something, you know. And I was there more than once, and so I did a good bit of singing on that, yeah.
Am I right that that was one of the reasons why Jeff was involved with one or two of your tracks for your solo album in the 90s?
Yes.
Your solo album's called, and we've got the song God's Good Time.
Yes, that's right. I became a Christian in 1988, and I wrote a whole bunch of God songs, and I took them around to Jeff, and he liked some of them. And he said, well, I'll produce one of these for you, Dave, if you like. And he said, play them all to me and listen to them. And there was a couple he liked, but one he plumbed for was one that was in a very early stage, God's Good Time. And he said, yeah, that one. He said, that's the one. Let's work on that one. And he had really odd timing and everything. And I remember Jeff wasn't the slightest bit bothered by the fact the timing was weird. He things that would bother ordinary people when they see you've got to make that before 4 or 3, 4 or some 4, you know, some kind of timing thing. But the timing was a little bit weird. But Jeff wasn't the slightest bit bothered, and he just went with it. And he played a bit on that and did a bit of some of the singing, that high shrieking at the end, that's Jeff doing his impression of Tina Turner. And we had a bit of fun doing that, yeah. And it's a nice record.
And in good time, we'll know the only way to go. God's good time, we're gonna know how to grow. All in God's good time, in heaven's grand design, these things we're sure to find in God's good time. Time we'll see the truth behind the prophecy. In God's good time, it's gonna be reality. It's all in God's good time, in heaven's grand design. God's good time. So pay no heed when trouble's coming, knocking on your door. 'Cause you and I are gonna be forevermore. All in God's good time, in heaven's grand design, these things we're sure to find in God's good time. this world was meant to be, and peace on earth won't be a fantasy for you and me.
And you're still very prodigious in terms of producing material. We're getting up to about 2018, I think. You released a Highland EP, and we've got the song Still. Can you tell us about Still and the EP? And Still features a bit of a collaboration with another singer.
Yeah, Alyssa Smiley, her name is. She lived in this little village where we were living up in Scotland. We were up there for 6 months, and I took all my recording gear up there, so I was... And I'd written that song for my wife, Still. It's a love song. And I had a bit of trouble. It was a bit hard to sing it, to be honest. So I said, have a go at this, Alyssa, because I find this a bit hard to sing. Change the key. And I was able to sing a harmony with her on some bits of it. But she got this, the one bit that I found difficult to sing, she brought that bit to life. And I thought, oh, that sounds good. Yeah, let's do that. So, and would you believe, just recently, just last year, I've re-recorded that song myself and I managed to do the bit that I couldn't do before. So maybe that will come out at some point. But yeah, Alyssa was just starting out learning to play guitar, learning to sing. She was just kicking around things at the folk clubs and a really great, great singer.
Thank you. sleepy eyes. You can take my word for it that I will still be here when you arise. I love you still. I love you. Yeah, I will love you still.
And we close with a song that I don't think has been released, but is a current song of yours. And I know that you release your material often under the Morganization name now. And one thing that I didn't mention on purpose earlier was that you were an early member of Magnum.
Oh, Magnum, yeah.
Our final song is Laws of Motion.
Yes.
Magnum's Tony Clarkin, who was very sadly recently.
What happened was I wrote the words, some years ago when a friend of mine died, and I wrote some of those words down. I was kicking them around, and then I only got to finish the song off last November, I think it was. My friend who engineers them, he sent me the master the day before I heard that Tony had died, and that was in Tony died, I think, January the 3rd of this year, just early this year. And so although it was written about something else, the two things happening together just so reminded me of Tony, because the song just speaks about you turn around and people have just gone, they've just disappeared, and that happens all the more frequently the older you get, you know. And so that song now speaks to me of Tony Clarkin, who was a lovely friend, a great musician, and he died early this year.
You were a part of Magnum prior to they recording their first album, weren't you?
Yes, I was with Magnum when they were first called Magnum, when they used to do a residency at a nightclub in Birmingham. They used to be called Fred's Box, would you believe?
Yeah.
We changed the name to Magnum, and I think that was Tony's name, as I recall. I think he said, let's call it Magnum. And we all said, what's that? And he said, it's the gun Clint Eastwood uses, all that. So, but whatever. We all had a laugh about that. And then we left the residency at the nightclub and we went on the road, and I was with them for about 6 months or so. And then I left, yeah. But we did make a couple of records. Yeah, made a record called Sweets for My Sweet, and we made Baby I Need, which was a song of mine. So there's a few things in the pot recorded, as it were.
So before we close with Laws of Motion, given that this is only a taster of your music, how can people find out more about your website, social media?
Yeah, my website's probably the best thing. The website, davescottmorgan.com, all one word. And my YouTube is also under Dave Scott Morgan, all one word. So it's YouTube/Dave Scott Morgan. That should find me, I think. And I've been doing a live broadcast on YouTube. Whatever's on my desk of that week gets aired.
Well, fantastic, Dave. It's been amazing to talk to you. And there's just so much wonderful music to dig in. So hopefully this will continue to spread the word on your music. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Jason. That's great. Thank you.
People go, places stay. I saw it all today. The city streets look the same, but you were nowhere in the frame as people pass along the way. Like it was another day. I turned around and you were gone. Without a bye or leave, or I'll see you later on. But it feels like the laws of motion going wrong. People go, places stay. Yesterday, you were there, full of fun, playing country on that Fender telly with a broken string, making music out of everything. Bye.
place anymore. Always on the go, always on the go, always on the go, always on the go. People go, places stay, the laws of motion say. It takes a lot of energy just to lift your head and see the sun rise high above a broken land. When there's nobody to understand, I close my eyes and you had gone. Stay. People go, places stay. People go, places stay.
Through the airways of voices soar, from the past to the future we explore. Each episode a journey unfolds, and the strange brew stories untold. Ooh, yeah. So thank you for listening, for being here with us. Your support means the world, that's a plus. And if you'd like to help us keep the show